This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
Hello, everyone. It's Nigel Seeley. It's Betting Weekly Game Bet Match, and it's the final major of 2023. The US Open from Flushing Meadow in New York starts on Monday. The draw has been made, and it's a very interesting one. It's very good if your name is Novak Djokovic or you are Novak Djokovic better. To highlight the best bets, look for any angles potentially we have in this draw. I'm delighted to say joining me is our senior ATP Tour handicapper, is Sean Calvert. Now, Sean, as I said there, the draw, Novak Djokovic supporters, they'll be rubbing their hands with glee. What a draw he's been given there.
Yeah, I mean, we're just talking about it briefly off air there. I mean, I'm just sort of looking at it now and see if I can think, you know, come up with someone that to oppose him with in the bottom half of the draw. But, you know, if you compare the quality of the top half and the quality of the bottom half, you know, it's no comparison, is it? It's Djokovic has got a very, very straightforward looking route. You know, you never know in Grand Slams. You know, he got defaulted, didn't he, 1 year? Which I'm sure everybody remembers. But assuming that, you know, that's not going to happen again, you wouldn't have thought in a career. It's hard for me to look at that and say, well, this is tricky. This could be tricky. You know, look at the other half of the draw. There's all sorts of possibilities and difficulties for Alcaraz. But Djokovic, I'm not sure who's going to beat him in that bottom half of the draw.
No, it does look very favourable to him. He did mark his return to America with a win in Cincinnati in that epic match against Carlos Alcaraz, which was a big marker for him. And he's now making his return to the US Open, and he has been given the easiest of possible draws. We're going to break down this show. What we're going to do here, we're going to look at each quarter, break down the quarters, look at who potentially can get through to semi-finalists. And then at the end of the show, Sean is going to give you his picks. But before we do that, Sean, I'm going to give you some outright markets. I looked at the weather forecast today. I've been looking at it all week, 78, 75, nice 80 degrees, sunny, packing all my swimming trunks, my shorts. I've looked today, thunder
swimming
and
trunks,
lightning.
Where are you going?
Swimming pool where I am today.
Of course, yeah.
Hey, don't worry about that. Rooftop swimming pool. You'll be seeing all the pictures on the Instagram.
Don't even get food at my hotel.
We don't get food. I don't get food. You've got to buy the food around the pool. And there's a pool, rooftop pool. But okay. I've been working out and everything. Getting the old
Have
abs
you?
Ready? No. But we've got the swimming trunks. It's thunder and lightning. All day Tuesday. Rain on Wednesday. What's going on?
It does look unsettled. You know, if you were going to ask me about the weather and the conditions and that, which you probably will in a minute. Yeah, the weather does look unsettled. But you never know, do you? When it's just thunderstorms, that is one where I just think maybe not. Because it's very localised, that. It could miss the area completely. In which case it's fine. Obviously, if it hits the area, then you've got quite a bit of heavy rain to contend with. So it's kind of pot luck there, really. But the good news is, from when I'm there, it looks quite nice. So that makes a change, doesn't it?
Well, normally, that does make a change.
When I get there, it's normally straight on with the wet coats and all the rest of it, raincoats. But it looks all right for when I'm there, which is great.
I'm worried about the flight, 33,000 feet with lightning bolts coming through you. I don't like flying the best of times, you know that.
Do you not? I mean, it doesn't bother me, really. There's nothing you can do about that. Just, you know, you'll be fine. Don't worry.
Did I tell you, my mum and dad, they know, I like, you said to me the other day, like, you know, I have to have a couple of drinks just to get on the airplane because I do get very nervous. When I'm cruising at the level, I like it. But the rickety little flights you're going on, I don't like them. But I like the big ones, you know, going with British Airways, there would be nice big plane. Or if we go to Dubai, the plane is superb. I love the gliders and all that kind of stuff. But I don't like it, especially the idea of coming down into New Manhattan with thunder and lightning. I do not like that. My mum and dad, look at this. My wife's 50th birthday, decided to buy me like going loop the loop on air, like airplanes.
What's that? I can't really see that from the camera.
It's a light aircraft experience where you go doing acrobatics.
I said, is that a wind-up then?
It's not. They thought that would be a nice present for me.
Have you never mentioned to them that you're not particularly keen on flying?
They must see me going abroad to work for Bet Rivers and working. I think to myself, I'll tell you what we do. We'll give him a loop-the-loop lessons.
See, this is the problem. You've obviously never told them.
No.
That you're a little bit, you know, a bit of a nervous flyer. See, this is what you get for being all brazen, you see. Now they've just assumed that you love flying and they're giving you all that. When are you doing it?
I put it off twice. I think I'm doing it September the 22nd.
But make a note in your diaries, everybody. There should be an interesting
what happens if
Instagram
something
that
happens to him up there with him doing the loop-de-loop? If say, am I going to bring the plane down?
I think you're worrying too much about this.
I like my feet firmly on the ground. I don't want to be up there. Nice present for me. A nice meal, bottle of wine, nice bit of music, perfect.
Everyone knows what to get you now for your next birthday. Yeah,
loop-de-loop lessons around the southern England is not really what I would want to do. Anyway, that's one of my fears now. I'm getting all anxious, worrying about that loop-de-loop. Let's get on to the most important thing. Let's have a look at the US Open men's singles draw. The bracket is out. The first bracket draw, obviously, Carlos Alcaraz has been given a tough draw, as we said there at the top of the show. The top half is absolutely stacked compared to the bottom half of the draw. But look at quarter one here now. Look at this. Carlos Alcaraz should get through to the last 16 pretty easy. We probably could face Cam Norrie, or we could place, I don't know, Grigsmore or Artur Fields or one of those players. But then you've got a last 16 battle between Zverev and Sinner, which is going to be increasing. And the winner plays Alcaraz. So for Zverev and Sinner, this has been a nightmare draw. Alcaraz himself is not going to be a draw, but he's going to be the favourite for those matches. But for Jannik Sinner and Zverev, we spoke about Zverev at 33-1 to be potentially someone who we might have thought if we had a free bet. One of the questions we were asked before was a free bet. But if you took that free bet now, you can get 40-1 with Bet Rivers. But before we go on to that, let's have a look at the outright markets. Novak Djokovic, he is the favourite, as we would expect, plus 124. Carlos Alcaraz now out to plus 170. Daniil Medvedev is 10-1. Jannik Sinner, 14-1. Stefanos Tsitsipas is 33-1. Alexander Zverev, who's in that quarter we've mentioned there, the first quarter, 40-1. Holger Rune in the easier bottom half, 40-1. Kasper Ruud, 66-1. You know, beating finalists here before. Taylor Fritz, 66-1. Herbert Hurkacz is 80. Andre Rublev, 80. Francis Tiafoe, who's going to be popular with the American supporters. He always is. He's 8-1. Sebastian Korda, 100. And Tommy Paul, 150. So they are the top dozen or so in the betting. We mentioned that first quarter, Alcaraz. What do you look at that draw? What do you look at that section there and think to yourself, what's going to happen here? I mean, it looks as though we're going to a collision course between Alcaraz against Sinner or Zverev in the quarterfinals. But it's hard to make a case for anybody else, isn't it, in that part of the draw?
In Q1?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of decent players in here, you know. This isn't a gimme. I mean, Kopfer in the first round isn't a gimme. He should win it, Alcaraz. You would expect him to win that, but that's not a gimme. Kopfer's going to be, you know, difficult to beat. I wouldn't be surprised if that went, you know, slightly over. You've got some players in here that have done really well recently on the hard courts. Dan Evans won Washington, DC. Grigsboer obviously got to the final of that tournament as well. He's been playing well. Artur Fies, you know, Cam Norrie is not in the greatest of form. You wouldn't perhaps expect it, but he's got a decent record against Alcaraz. He's beaten him a few times, Norrie. It's possible that Norrie could come back to form and maybe challenge him. Zverev in there, obviously, as well. Dimitrov. Vavrinka has been playing really, really well lately. Possibility for doing something. You wouldn't have thought he'd go all the way, but, you know, he might cause one or two upsets. And obviously Sinner in there as well. I mean, that's you know, that's not an easy, and Zverev as well. So this is not an easy section for me for Alcaraz at all. I've taken Zverev here, but do you want me to come on to that now, or should we?
Yeah, of course, yeah. We're going to go through each. What we'll do is we'll go through the quarters, and if you've got a bet in a particular quarter, a play like state the bet, and if you've got a bet on the outright, state the outright, and we'll just do a recap at the end.
Okay, so for me, Zverev. I mean, he missed last year's US Open due to that injury that he had, but you know, his record here is excellent. He's won 11 of his last 13 matches here, Alexander Zverev. And the two that he lost were both five setters, one of them to Dominic Thiem in a final that he should have won in 2020 in the COVID year when it was played behind closed doors. And the other one was to Djokovic in five sets in the semi-final in 2021. So his recent record here is excellent. He's going to enjoy coming back here for sure. I looked at his stats here. His service points won and return points won total in his career at the US Open is 105. And I've compared that with Alcaraz's record, because obviously they're in the same section. And Alcaraz is only 1 point better off at 106, service points won, return points won total. And he's got an 11-1 win-loss record. So there's very, very little between the two in terms of their stats at the US Open. Zverev comes in, you know, in decent form, showed a very decent level in winning only 6 points fewer than Novak Djokovic in that match in Cincinnati the other week. He's also beaten Alcaraz three times out of five career meeting. So he's not going to go into a meeting with Alcaraz should that be the case. So that turned out to be the case. He's not going to fear Carlos Alcaraz. So in a market that does look that is heavily obviously dominated by Alcaraz and Djokovic, for me, the 40-1 on Zverev is the sort of the standout viable alternative. I mean, if you're looking at Sinner, who obviously is in that section as well, I mean, I'm still very, very unconvinced about his fitness. You know, he showed it yet again, didn't he, in Cincinnati, having won that title in Canada a couple of days later. He lost to Ljubic, as I suggested on this show that he perhaps would. And again, he didn't look at all fit, did he? And that's after a week. That's after 7 days of tennis. You know, he still doesn't look like he can go all the way. You know, he might end up beating Zverev and then, you know, not having the physicality. That's a possibility. But the prices that they are, I'm more than happy to take Zverev at 40-1 in this section.
There is another reason. Obviously, Alcaraz is the defending champion here. If you go back through the records, it's very rare that people defend their title at the US Open. And it's also a tournament where obviously people come in with a lot of injuries at the end of the campaign. The last person to defend their title here was Roger Federer in 2007-2008. And when you consider...
I hadn't realized that's a good trend, yeah.
So it's when you consider some of the greats who won it. Nadal's won it. Djokovic has won it. Djokovic has never won back-to-back tournaments here. He's been beaten finalists, but there's been some decent winners here at the top of their game. Andy Murray.
Medvedev,
they've never ever defended it. So 2007, 2008, last time that anyone defended their men's singles title, and that was Roger Federer. So there is a case to be made to oppose Carlos Alcaraz, not only given the draw, but given the stats. And a lot of people...
And his form. He did come here last year in a similar sort of situation. Didn't play particularly well. He lost early in Canada. I think he got quarterfinals in Cincinnati. I think he got to, but didn't play particularly well. Ended up winning the tournament. Didn't play particularly well throughout the tournament. He's got sort of scratched his way through, didn't he? He wasn't beating people comfortably. Memorable match against Sinner that Sinner could have won. So you know, his form hasn't been great. You know, Canada, Cincinnati. It is difficult. You know, when you win Wimbledon, people just think, oh, he's going to contend. He's going to win all these majors, and yeah, he will probably as time goes on, but. You know, he's not going to win every single one. There's some quality opposition. He's got a very, very difficult draw. We haven't even mentioned the second quarter, but, you know, form isn't great. Draw isn't great. So for me, I'm happy to take Zverev. It's very, very difficult with these men's majors, isn't it? They tend to be won by one of the sort of one, two or three in the markets generally. But the US Open is slightly different. But it has been won by one of the top six seeds every year. Bar one, which was Marin Cilic in 2014, since Pete Sampras won it when he was seeded 17th in 2002. So one of the top six seeds does normally win it, but it's not always the number one or two seeds. We've had some quite decent price finalists here over the years as well, haven't we? 66-1 Casper Ruud last year. Zverev himself was 28-1 when he made the final. Kevin Anderson, 150-1 in 2017, and the year before that, Stan Wawrinka won it as a 33-1 shot. So it's had a bit more kind of unpredictability to it than the sort of French and Wimbledon and even the Australian has, you know, in recent years. So it is the better of the slams, the best of the slams for me for that each way value.
Yep. And obviously players come in a little bit after long seasons. I think it's so hard. I was always told when I started working in the betting industry, you want to be a bookie for the Aussie and the US and just want to be a better for the French and Wimbledon. I think that's sort of probably about right, really.
Well, I mean, Nadal won the French every year, didn't he? He's the only time I've had a reasonable bet on a very short price outright was Nadal at the French, because you could virtually guarantee he was either going to get to almost certain to get to the final, wasn't he? He was probably going to win that, but I don't think this is necessarily the case with Alcaraz here.
No, definitely not. Well, he's available at +170. We think that's probably a little bit on the short side. Well, we both agree it's on the short side. The stats aren't looking good for him and the draw hasn't been very good for him at all. Let's move on to the second quarter. And as you say, we haven't even mentioned the second quarter. And there's some talent in here. Daniel Medvedev, who's probably had the best form on the hard courts coming into the tournament or recently coming into the tournament. He's the number three seed. He's in that second section as well. So he's also in the top half. We also have Andrei Rublev, and it's a very heavy Russian contingent in this quarter. Karin Khachanov is also in there, 11th seed. Alex de Minaur, who's played quite well in the build-up to the US Open. Herbert Hercash, Berrettini is in there as well. That match, the first round match against Ugo Humbert, Berrettini is probably one of the best first round matches on the card. So there is some real quality in that Q2 as well, isn't there?
There's possibilities, yeah. I mean, some of those you've mentioned. Berrettini is a difficult one to judge, isn't he? If he finds his old form, you know, he's a contender at this tournament. Obviously had a lot of injuries and stuff, but if he's back to his best, which you know, we weren't expecting him to do much at Wimbledon, and then he started playing pretty well there, didn't he? Hasn't really kicked on since. I'm still not convinced that he's fully fit or fit enough to go the full distance in a major, but you know, he could be. That little rest that he's had, that might help him. I don't think it's a particularly great draw for Daniil Medvedev, this. I mean, he would have wanted, I'm sure, or I would have wanted, if I'd have been a Medvedev backer, I would have wanted him to face Djokovic. I think he's got a much, much better chance of beating Djokovic than beating Alcaraz. I've mentioned it many times, I don't think it's a good matchup for Medvedev, Carlos Alcaraz. Alcaraz knows how to beat Medvedev. Medvedev hasn't found any ways to counter it yet. So Medvedev will be hoping that I'm right and hoping that it's Zverev in the latter stages. Although Zverev beat Medvedev, didn't he, in Cincinnati in a not particularly great match in terms of quality. And he's not been playing well, Medvedev. You know, we thought he might win, or I thought he might win Canada, where he's got a great record, but he was very, very poor against Dimitrov there. Really, really poor. One of the worst matches I've ever seen him play. And he's not kicked on in Cincinnati. In previous years, he's done really well in the US Open build-up, hasn't he? Won plenty of these tournaments before the US Open. On the plus side for him, he's got what looks like an absolute gimme in the first round against Attila Balazs, who's barely played due to injuries in recent years at all. He's more of a clay court guy anyway. But Purcell could be interesting in the second round. If it's Purcell, that could be interesting. Purcell, Medvedev, because Purcell has got the sort of game to trouble Medvedev. And he's been playing very, very well lately. You know, he'll be coming to the net as often as he can. The tactic will be obvious for him. That's a possibility. Who else is in there? Borna Koric, who's playing Baez in the first round. He's also playing him in Winston-Salem later on today. So that's going to be a repeat. I'm not sure Koric is fit enough with that shoulder. I heard that he had a discussion about that shoulder at the end of his match yesterday in Winston-Salem. I don't think he's fit enough to go the full distance. Dimitrov's been playing really, really well. He could sneak through to the latter stages. You know, his form's very, very good recently. Kashanov's in there as well. Former semi-finalist here. Always shows up well in recent times in majors. Another one that's had an injury problem, though. So it's perhaps expecting a bit much of him. He hasn't played for quite some time, Kashanov. I think the one that is kind of standing out for me, really, is Hercash in this section. You know, he's beaten Medvedev a few times before. Should have beaten Alcaraz, shouldn't he, in Cincinnati? Had match points, also led, not well, yeah, he had one match point, didn't he? He was also, I think, 4-1 up in the tiebreak in that particular set. As he tends to do, he does struggle to get over the line. He does get very, very nervous when he has the opportunity, because he had opportunities against Djokovic at Wimbledon as well, failed to take them. But he's a player that could certainly do something in Q2. If I was betting on the Q2 win, I haven't seen the odds of Q2 as a standalone just yet, but I think Hercash would be one of interest. Rublev, obviously, as well, is in there. He's gone deep at this tournament before. I prefer him in slower conditions. He hasn't had a particularly great sort of summer, Rublev, but he's a possibility. So I'm not sure. I wouldn't have Medvedev down as a cert for this Q2 by any means. I'd be looking at Hercash if he's a decent price to win Q2.
The Hercash to come through Q2, but there's quality everywhere you look in that top half of the draw, in the first bracket, the second quarter. Huge amount of players with potential to go deep in the tournament, and it's loaded. And so I think the tips here, the advice here is to Carlos Alcaraz betters, be very careful, be very wary. I don't think it's going to be as easy as +170 for him to win this tournament. The stats are against him, and that draw is certainly looking very hard. Let's move to the bottom half of the draw. Q3, this one does seem a lot easier than the top half of the draw, as we've spoken about. We have Casper Ruud, the former finalist, last year's finalist, beaten finalist. He's having a terrible year at the moment. I couldn't bet him with your money. Sebastian Korda, who I'm on at the moment, but I was quite pleased with the draw he was given, but he's had to retire. Coming out, he beat Gasquet in a crazy match last night.
It was crazy. I watched all that match. It was bizarre.
Yeah, just weird match. He doesn't look fit at all. Francis Tiafoe, obviously going to have huge support from the American crowd. Tommy Paul in there. Davidovich Fokina could be anything. Holger Rune, you would turn around and say this could be his time. The draw could be favourable to him, but he's had fitness problems as well. So when you compare the quality in that Q1 and Q2, Q3, lots of decent players in there, but lots of big question marks about their fitness and their form coming into this tournament.
Yeah, a lot of question marks. This is a tough one. I mean, Casper Ruud would be a kind of a solid choice if you were going to bet the quarter winner. I can't imagine it'd be much value. Obviously made the final here last year. Not ideal conditions for Casper Ruud. He had it, sort of fitness problems as well at the match that he played. I think it was in Canada against Purcell. I think it was. He had a medical timeout as well. Back or hip problem, I think it was, Casper Ruud. He always plays a lot of tennis on the clay. You know, how much has he got left in the tank for this stage of the season? You wouldn't have him as a natural hard courter. He wouldn't be high up on my list of people who I would think are likely to win the US Open. But he might just have a nice draw here, because, you know, the obvious threat would be Seb Korda. For those that don't know, he turned his ankle, didn't he, in the Winston-Salem match against mm-hmm. Gasquet. That was a peculiar affair. As we mentioned, Korda served for the match. He didn't look anything close to convincing. I think he got broken to love. I think one of his serves barely made the net when he was trying to serve that match out. Gasquet ended up 4-1 up in the final ensuing final set tiebreak. Then he lost 5 points in a row, and then it just came down to who would choke the least, and it turned out to be Korda. Then he withdrew from his match against Lehecka. That's probably a precaution. Mm. He might be okay. I'd be more worried about his kind of the mental side from Korda. He looks awful trying to serve that match.
I can't get my head around that when the family is so sporting orientated and golfers. You would think that would be his strong point.
No, he looks terrified. And the outbursts that he was doing, he was shouting and swearing and stuff, wasn't he, when he failed to serve that match out. And he's not right mentally at the minute, Korda. I don't know whether there's something going on off the court that, you know, that we don't know about, or maybe he's struggling physically. Something's going on. He doesn't seem able to serve matches out. It doesn't seem likely that he's going to win a major at this point with that weakness. But if his ankle's okay, you know, he's got a tough first round match against Fuksovic, a repeat of a match that he played in Winston-Salem a couple of days ago. If he's fit, you could certainly see him beating Casper Ruud if he's fit and if he's, you know, right mentally, so to speak. TFO is another obvious threat. You know, he's been a little bit disappointing this hard court. Well, quite disappointing this hard court summer. You know, won Stuttgart in quick conditions on the grass. Hasn't really done anything since then. Ran into a red hot Stan Wawrinka in Cincinnati. Wawrinka was brilliant that day. Absolute vintage Wawrinka. Who then, of course, lost to Purcell the next round in straight sets. Very up and down these days, Stan, but he was really on the up that day. But Tiafoe loves it here. You know, he comes semi-final last year, wasn't a million miles away from beating Alcaraz. If he gets up for it again, which I'm sure he will, I think that, you know, the energy of New York, the energy of this tournament, the vibe, I think it really does suit Francis Tiafoe. So it wouldn't surprise me if he got to the latter stages. He would be high up on my list of people who I think could win Q3, as would Tommy Paul as well. If Tommy Paul's fit, he's been playing very well this hard court summer. Davidovich Fokina is also a contender, but how do you know what he's going to do? You know, it just throws away too many matches that he should win. And on occasions when things aren't going his way, he doesn't want to know. Like that match against Diminor when it got really, really windy. And he just thought, wow, I can't do this. So he just jacked it in. So you wouldn't have him as a sort of major winner, really. And Holger Rune is a real wild card here, because we don't know how he's going to be. If he suddenly recovered from this back injury that he's had since Wimbledon, you know, he could be a real contender. We might be looking at this in 2 weeks' time and saying, you know, Rune was the value, but he hasn't done anything since Wimbledon, and he hasn't been able to do anything because of this lower back problem that he's had. If you're back in Rune, you're probably getting a decent price, but you are taking a heck of a gamble on his fitness.
Yeah, Holger Rune is valuable at 40-1. I think he would be the one, I think, who could come through that draw.
And if I think fit,
he's the,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think he's the one that we could have a rebase on. I think if he gets to round two, round three, beats Lehecka, looks good, I think you could have a rebase. And some great first
round.
He's
in great form as well. Lehecka's in great form as well. And in, you know, into the final now of Winston-Salem.
There's some great first round matches there as well. Bublik against Team, Davidovich, Rakina, Giron. We'll have that all previewed to you tomorrow on Saturday. This is, we're recording this on Friday morning, so this is just the outright market. Look at the best bets with Bet Rivers on the men's singles draw. We will have the outright, the first round matches tomorrow on Saturday, so you have been plenty of time for Monday's start. So we look at the matches as well. So that's an interesting one there. So TFO potentially if you come through to the semi-finals, maybe Tommy Paul, but no real bet in that section.
I haven't seen the odds because we're recording this quite early. I don't think there's any odds on the quarter winners yet, are there?
No, they'll be available tomorrow on the BetRivers website. We're just looking at the outright markets at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the two I'd be looking at would, well, the three that look like they might be reasonable value, TFO, Paul, and as you say, Holger Rune, we might well have a rebase on him. Just depends how his back is.
Okay, let's move on to the bottom quarter. Now, just highlight how easy this is going to be. We potentially believe this is for Novak Djokovic, the plus 124 favourite. I can see Novak Djokovic starting off here at even money. I think at plus 124, I think it will tempt the big hitters in. I think the real big players will come in and say, plus money, we've got to bet him. Round one, Alexandra Muller. Round two, potentially Zabata Morales. Round three, Laszlo Jiří. Then in the
Nakashima.
Nakashima. Then in the last 16, you're looking at Felix Auger-Aliassime potentially, or if you can get past McDonald. And Felix Auger-Aliassime is in absolutely terrible form. And then Taylor Fritz or Tsitsipas. So the route he's been given is very, very easy compared to what we're talking about the top half of the draw. But in that quarter, there's some potentially really good matchups. Tsitsipas against Eubanks, potentially in round three, a repeat of the Wimbledon match they had there, the epic they had there with Eubanks come through. Eubanks is going to be hugely popular in the American crowd. They're going to be the new favourite there. You have Mazzetti, who's always capable of it. Taylor Fritz up against Steve Johnson, an interesting All-American first-round match as well. But apart from that, that's the rest of it. It's not really much, is there, to beat, really. But I think Tsitsipas, obviously, Fritz and Djokovic will dominate that quarter with Eubanks obviously going deep in the story if he can beat Tsitsipas in round three. But it's very hard to see anyone stopping Novak Djokovic, not only in that quarter, but to win this tournament.
Well, certainly before the final. Mm. This quarter, this Q4, I don't know what price Djokovic will be to win it, but I imagine it'd be seriously odds on. I can't see him not winning it unless something peculiar happens, you know, like a withdrawal or an injury, or even a disqualification, which has happened to him before. Unless something peculiar like that happens, it's very difficult to look at this draw, which I'm looking at now, and thinking, well, he's got a chance. Tsitsipas, I'm not completely convinced that he's going to beat Raonic in the first round. If he does, it'll probably be just because Raonic can't physically manage to last a sort of long four or five sets. I can see Raonic causing him an awful lot of problems there. You know, even if Tsitsipas doesn't have a great record here, off the top of my head, I think he's 5 wins and 5 losses at the US Open. He lost to Alahi Galan here, either last year or the year before. Tsitsipas coming here in no form at all, hard court summer. Well, he wouldn't lost Cabos, but you know, there wasn't much there that he had to beat. Struggling, just, you know, the return game of his, just still, it's nowhere near good enough to beat a Novak Djokovic in the sort of form that Djokovic is in. It would be very surprising for me if Tsitsipas came through this quarter. He might well get to the latter stage to face Djokovic, but hard to see him beating Novak Djokovic, isn't it? The rest of the quarter, I'm not seeing anything here that could, unless Felix somehow suddenly finds his form from certainly not this season, last season, sort of a year ago. Mm. Yeah, unless that happens, which is possible, you know, that could happen. Doesn't seem likely at the moment, but it certainly could happen. Fritz, I don't think he doesn't have the game to beat Djokovic. I mean, Djokovic beat him comfortably, didn't he, the other week? I think he bageled him as well, didn't he, in one of the sets? He certainly beat him pretty comfortably. I can't remember the score for the top of my head, but Jere, Serendolo, Mazzetti, Eubanks, I can't see anything other than Novak Djokovic to win this quarter. Yeah. Possibly, you know, the only possible, as I say, if Felix suddenly finds his best form out of absolutely nowhere because he's looked as bad as he can be, you know, recently. It just looks Novak Djokovic all the way, really. Unless, at his age, maybe an injury, but barring that, you got to say Djokovic.
I don't think the conditions will be hot enough. I think if it's hotter and it's really, it could play the body. But I think the weather is cooler than last year and not as hot as it has been. I don't know.
I mean, just a general injury, you know, because he is 36. He makes a point quite regularly, doesn't he? That, you know, oh, I am 36. I'm you know, I've got this and that, which I don't like to talk about it, but he says this quite a lot. I think that's a lot of that is just to sort of take pressure off himself. But it must be the case at his age that he must have some issues here and there. He's not going to be coming in here like a spring chicken at 36. But this is me trying to find a reason that he's not going to win this quarter. And it's a kind of a tenuous one, isn't it? Assuming he's fit, he wins the quarter. I think it's that simple.
So no opposing Novak Djokovic in that quarter, but we do have some opposition on the outright market. And is it just the one pick you got for us on the outright market, Sean? Is there a couple?
At the moment, I've just got the one pick. As I say, I've not seen the quarter winners' prices yet. We can always come back to that.
Yeah.
Potentially tomorrow if there are prices. But for the moment, I'm quite happy to take that 40-1 each way on Zverev. The obvious winner of the top half is Alcaraz, but as I say, not completely convinced that he's going to do it, and the most viable in terms of value to oppose that with is Zverev. I think Sinner's too short. Medvedev, I can't see with the matchup against Alcaraz, and he's not in great form anyway. So it looks to me like Zverev is the best value with BetRivers at 40-1 each way.
Remember, they're offering each way as well. So half the odds, 1-2. It's 20-1 for the German to make the final. He's been to the final here before. A brilliant record in New York. And at the value price of 40-1. The draw might be difficult for him, but there is reasons to get with the German, and there are reasons to oppose Carlos Alcaraz. Going to have to be a very brave man to oppose Novak Djokovic, but also going to have to be a very rich man to be betting him at plus 124. And I do expect that plus 124 to disappear. So that's it from our outright. But we have a few other things before we go. We have four ways to follow us on Betting Weekly Game Bet Match. The first way you can do it is download this podcast, Betting Weekly Game Bet Match, on your preferred podcast provider. You can also follow us on our Instagram and our Twitter account at Because We Win. And please make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel, the Betting Weekly Studios. There is some brilliant content there. A great Premier League show this weekend. We're on fire on that 50% ROI, making a huge amount of money on that by following that. We have the European leagues as well, covered by our brilliant soccer handicappers. And you're going to get great content on that throughout the fortnight here in New York. Myself and Sean will be back tomorrow looking at the men's matches in the first round. Rory Jawani and myself have recorded a preview on the WTA tournament, the women's tournament here at Flushing Meadow. And we'll also have some first round picks there as well. I'll be in New York from Tuesday in the rain. Sean will be and there on the weekend in the sunshine. Before we go, Sean, we do have some questions. I did ask if anybody had any questions, and I've been actually inundated with questions. So thank you very much for your questions. I've got some questions, and it's very nice, very interesting questions. So the first one is to you, Sean. It said, what rule change would Sean create or change to make tennis better? So what is there any rule change that you would create or change to make tennis better?
Better in what way? Better for punters or just better for people to watch?
Well, I think it can be interpreted any way you want it to be interpreted, whichever way you think. I personally think that tennis should be, I think the tie break should be shorter. I do, but my opinion.
Shorter? What do you mean, like first to five or something?
Yeah, I think sometimes we go into the matches are too long. I think to get people into tennis, I think you should shorten down a little bit. And I think maybe do without a tie break in a best of three set match. Because I think a lot of people go to tennis matches and they start off and this is great. And it's from my experience, then they just go to the bar, not interested in going. I think if you shorten it down, all formats of sport and cricket, for example, have done a 2020 format. I think if you can shorten it down in lesser tournaments, maybe not the majors, but in best of three sets, I think if you done away with a tie break, you might just one game, whoever wins it, maybe a bit different. But I would try to make the format a little bit shorter to keep interest higher.
Yeah, possible. I mean, if you're talking about what annoys me about we could be here for quite some time. I think the main rule that a lot of people have a problem with is the medical timeouts and the bathroom breaks. That is something that they've failed to sort out. It's still used mainly tactically, isn't it, by people? You know, or suddenly got this, you know, that sort of five all in the final set just before your opponent serves, suddenly got to take an off-court medical timeout for, you know, for 5 minutes. I've said this before. If you are going to take a medical timeout, there should be some sort of penalty for taking it. Like, this is just off the top of my head, but like, say you lost, say you conceded a game. If you want to take a medical timeout, okay, go take it. But you've had to forfeit a game. I think that would cut out a lot of these needless medical timeouts, these bathroom breaks, and the towels. I blame Greg Rozetsky for this. This business about the towels. Why do you haven't sweated? I've seen people being aced by John Isner or someone, then going to get a towel. What have you been doing in the last 30 seconds that suddenly made you sweat? You haven't even touched the ball. The towel, that should just be at changeovers. You know, if you really, really, really are sweating, then go to your chair, quickly towel off, come back. Don't be toweling after every 5 seconds. That's just a nervous thing. Rozetsky started that, and it's horrible. But those are the two things that really kind of need changing. The bathroom breaks and the injury breaks, that's been something they've sort of tried to sort out, but people still use it tactically, and it's quite blatantly needs fixing.
Yeah, so there you go. That's Sean's answer. There we've got a couple more. I'm going to keep these. We'll keep from over. We've got quite that. That question was from Adam Monday. Adam's also asked you a question, Sean. Has Sean ever seen any courtsiders at any events?
Not personally. I mean, I know they're there. At certain events, that's kind of a given. But you know, I think they're very, very discreet about it. They don't
courtside here.
It's not obvious. Yeah, they're not. It's I think it's also quite difficult to do now in terms of, you know, you'd have to have a ultra fast internet connection, and it's very difficult to do. I haven't personally seen it. I know it exists.
We can't get an Instagram post from you for now. How are we going to get you can courtside?
That's another thing. If we're going on about stuff that annoys me, in Indian Wells, that was Indian Wells, wasn't it? I couldn't even get a photo through.
How are they courtside? We can't get reception anywhere in these courts.
Depends where you are. I mean, I'm guessing if they tried it at Indian Wells, they'd end up quite poor because, you know, the connection was really, really bad there. I haven't personally encountered any. If the question is, have I seen them and spoken to them and whatever, the answer is no, I haven't. I haven't personally seen any, no.
And I'll give you the final question. We'll hold some of these over for the tournament as we go. If you've got any more questions, get them in. What event is your ideal to go to? The events you've been to, what is your favourite event, John?
The ones that I've been to or the ones that I'd like to go to?
Which ones would you like to go to and which ones have you been to? Which ones do you say I'll return there?
I like Indian Wells. I love US Open, but this is the first time I've actually been to the US Open since 2008. That stat that you mentioned earlier, actually, about Federer being the last one to defend the title, that was 2008. That was the last time I was there. So it's, you know, a good 15 years, but I just haven't had the chance to go until this year. The ones that I tend to like are the ones where it's I've got a very specific list of requirements. Not too many people.
Certainly be number one.
I don't mind the US Open because it's a very different vibe. There's a lot of energy there, and it's a different kind of feeling. Some of these tournaments, particularly Wimbledon, when you sat there. And the Queens, when you're kind of crammed into those tiny little seats and everyone's, you know, that's horrible. A lot of space, or a decent amount of space. Nice bit of sun. Indian Wells is great. You know, I would like to go do the Los Cabos and Acapulco double now that that's their back-to-back tournaments next year. But I'm never going to get the time away from home for that, I don't think. Certainly not in the next couple of years anyway. But yeah, anywhere by the sea, somewhere by the seaside, you know, like Borstad by the sea. I've not been there yet. Somewhere near a beach. Umag, I think, would be a really, really good one to do. I haven't had the chance to do that. Maybe I'll have the chance to do that in this next year coming 2024. Those are the sort of tournaments that I like to go to, yeah.
My two favourites last year were Dubai. I like Dubai anyway, so I love Dubai.
I'm not keen on Dubai.
I like the little Irish sold on it. Center that the town they had. I thought it was quite nice. It was quite a nice, good feeling. I like Dubai, and the weather was great. I love Dubai. I'm a big Dubai fan.
Too pricey for me.
And the second one was Monte Carlo. Monte Carlo was just sensational. The scenery and actually, you know, being watching that tennis, that tournament over the years, and being there watching it, that was amazing. And for
it was packed, wasn't it? Wasn't it quite busy?
It was busy. It was busy.
I wouldn't like it, would I?
I don't know. I think you wouldn't like paying. You wouldn't like paying for lunch there. You wouldn't like having you take your sandwiches in. I can guarantee you that you wouldn't be very happy about that.
I think I'd be moaning. I've seen the beer prices, by the way, for the US Open. Somebody posted it on Twitter.
About $20, though.
It's just shy of $20, I think.
It was $18 for a can of Heineken last year.
Yeah, it's roughly that sort of price. Yeah.
Yeah. Needless to say, I wasn't drinking many Heinekens in the game. I think it was about $6 for a bottle of water. I think.
Something like that. I'm sure there'll be an issue with the water that I will encounter at the tournament. That's normally what happens. They normally stop me from taking bottles in, etc. But
they are your sorry, Sean. Go on, sorry.
I'm about done.
unload a bit of fury about water. I just one good little bit of housekeeping. Bet Rivers are offering a special at the US Open. It's a daily special on the main draw. You get a 50% match bet up to $25 on a live wager each day of the US Open. So if you bet in play of $25 up to $25, you get 50% matched for a future use in the tournament, which is a nice offer that'll be running throughout the tournament as well. So a little bit of housekeeping there. So Sean, I'll talk to you tomorrow. Enjoy the day.
Yes,
the
you.
Bet for us is Verev each way at a very nice 40-1. Fade on Alcaraz, but Novak Djokovic, he is the man to beat. The draw has been great. You have good luck with your bets, and we'll speak to you all again tomorrow. Take care.